it's Herbert. And you're listening to the About Last Night podcast, you slippery little son of a bitch.
Hey.
Chewing on some gushers?
Red vines.
Nice, dude. Close in the gummy family.
We have a, like, my wife has set up a craft service table in the kitchen.
Oh, just to keep keep that set life going.
Just because we're so bored.
I mean, that's actually that's a resourceful creative. That benefits everybody, right?
Everybody, everything except for my waistline.
Damn, dude. No, you look, you're fit, dude. I feel like you're somebody that's, I've never seen, like, you know, a beach picture of where you're like, dude, LeVar Burton, like, this guy's got to put down the handy snacks and pick up the dumbbells. You know, you've never gotten those. And I feel like, you know, that they'll find you if you allow your body to get there. Right.
Yeah, they will. They will now more than ever, you know,
like if there was ever a time. If you'd packed on, like, let's say between seasons, because you did 21 seasons of Reading Rainbow, right?
20 something, 21, 20, something like that.
A lot. Yeah. By the way, I got to get that sweatshirt that you're wearing. We'll talk about that post podcast. You're probably like, yeah, dude, just go on fucking Amazon, dude. It's out there for everybody.
No, not this one.
Not that one. That's I can tell it's a collector's item, baby. But if you had put on, let's say, like 50 between seasons 6 and 7, and you came back and were like trying to just heavily breathe through the books, people would have been like, maybe pick up a Jenny Craig pamphlet and put down, you know,
put down the book, pick up a dumbbell.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, how are you?
I'm good, Adam. I'm well.
I don't know.
All things considered, you know, it's like, it's the end of the world right outside the window, right outside the door there. And
dude, it's crazy. Literally on fire.
I'm trying to stay inside and, you know, live to see tomorrow. That's my whole goal right now.
Are you an early riser? Like, even like pre-COVID, how is it? What's the biggest thing that you've noticed, like, in your life routine that you've adjusted for the better?
I am more forgiving of myself when I feel like just tired or exhausted or irritable. I'm just giving myself more space and grace to be exactly whatever state I'm in and not judging so much, you know, not calling myself lazy, you know, not getting in my own shit about just what the realities are of living in this situation.
Yeah.
You know, the isolation and the lack of human contact outside of the people that live under this roof with me. It's not easy. It's been, you know, it's a daily battle. Some days are really good. Some days not so good. Some hours are not so good.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Are you quarantining with the family?
My wife, my daughter, and my mother-in-law.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Man, this much time with the in-laws, I'm sure you've,
Thank God I love my mother-in-law.
Okay, good. Yeah. Yeah.
Really.
Okay, because I know there's people out there, I'm sure we both know, where they're like, yeah, we just decided, like, when shit hit the fan, like, let's get everybody together, not really thinking about the longevity of somebody coming into your room, maybe at 3 a.m. being like, do you guys remember where the peanut butter crackers are? And you're like, bitch, it is 3 a.m., you better. So I'm glad that you have some fond connections.
I'm good here. We're very fortunate. We have enough space that we can all, you know, claim our own little territory when we need to get away from one another. And otherwise it's pretty cool. My daughter's 26. She's been here for going on her third year. She's just waiting for her roommate to finish, a stint in Scotland, and then they're going to move into apartment together.
Oh, wow.
So it's, you know, my wife loves having her at home.
Of course.
Quiet as it's kept, I'm really digging it too.
I know, right? There is something, I mean, and you can really speak to this. You started working, I mean, you know, take us back even before Roots in 1977, which was what that kind of was the first real gig, or were you kind of jamming before that? Do you count
Roots was my first audition.
No shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Roots is my first professional audition.
Damn. All right. So you are the wrong guy to talk to about, man, just sweat it out. There's a, like at least 10 to 20 kind of no's before you get even a kind of yes. No, you just walked in and do you remember that day vividly?
I remember the period vividly. Yeah. It wasn't just one day. I mean, the casting process lasted weeks.
Oh, wow.
Weeks, literally weeks. Yeah.
Was it grueling? Emotionally?
Emotionally, yeah. Emotionally, yeah, because they postponed the casting decision like three times to the point where the day that they told me I had the job, I did not expect them to announce their choice, even on that occasion. I thought this is just another step in the long chain of steps. But that was the day that they said, you know, Stan Margulies came out of the office at ABC. Stan Margulies was the producer of Roots. Mm-hmm. He came out of the office after I had been in there for a few minutes talking to him. And it was a bunch of ABC executives, you know. And Stan came out after I had left. And he said, pack your bags, kid. You're going to Savannah. And 2 weeks later, I was on location.
Oh, my God. Probably also then a little bit of a blessing in disguise to not maybe have to go through a rigorous audition process like that right out of the gate. But if you have no basis for comparison, right, that you're jumping fully in and kind of don't really have anything to be like, oh, this is a lot, like in any sort of complaints to rise to the top because you don't know anything different, right?
I didn't for a long time. My first professional day as an actor, Cicely Tyson played my mother. Dr. Maya Angelou played my grandmother. So I was like, I was swimming in the deep end from jump.
Now we both share many things in common. Right. Same love for snacks, same zest, same, probably, I don't know anybody, a bigger Reading Rainbow fan, than you, then it'd probably go LeVar Burton, Adam Ray. You could probably find some fat kid at a Pizza Hut in, Des Moines, Iowa, who's probably got every, lyric of the song memorized. I feel like I can hit the pitch of every note better, but
I'm gonna tell you, there are there's a whole generation of adults in their 40s now, who grew up on the show, who can sing that song for you as well. It's not just kids in Iowa.
Oh yeah. You know? Oh yeah.
It's a couple of generations of folk.
Did you have any say in the theme song?
No, the theme song was written independently of my
okay.
involvement.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. But we both.
Why would you?
I don't know, because it's so dope, and like you're just a smooth guy, man, and like you, I feel like, you know, you're involved in all the right stuff, and I feel like, I don't know. Also, I'm always curious with shows like that have that
iconic
staying power. Yeah, that right. Like, and you're such. I mean, it was, you know, you and the show are synonymous. So mm-hmm. I guess it's just when something is that solid too, I'm just like, man, I wonder if. I guess there's a world where I envision you in the studio. Butterfly in the sky. Play that back one more time.
Yeah. It was written by Steve Horlick, and the singer who sang those original tracks is Tina Fabrique. Tina Fabrique. And then we did in the 80s. We did a remake of the song, and Chaka Khan. Wrote the arrangement and plays drums on the track and sings. But the fans love the original.
Dude, really it is. It's version. Got. I mean, dude, it's got a. I don't know if Motown's the right verse, but like there's, I mean, I've heard some killer remixes too. I've definitely sung at karaoke many a nights, which had social media been around in the, mid 90s, I probably would have sent you 4 to 5 12 minute clips of me just singing it.
It's got a little bounce to it. It's a,
oh yeah, dude. When it kicks into, I can go anywhere. I mean, you know.
Yeah. That's when you let it all hang out.
Yeah. But we both went to USC and you,
aha!
Yeah. And fight on, baby.
Well, that's where I was when I got cast in Roots. I was a sophomore.
Holy shit.
Yeah. I was in my sophomore year studying theater at USC when I got cast.
That's crazy because I remember being a sophomore at SC and not even thinking, you know, they stepping out of college to try to pursue your dream was not really encouraged. I think people were doing it. Some people, I think, that were maybe from LA that had some ties going into their college experience to the business had some, you know, opportunities coming their way. So how does that happen then for you?
They had, exhausted. Lynn Stallmaster, legendary casting agent, had conducted sessions in New York, Los Angeles, Chicago, twice. And they had come back to LA and just, they hadn't found their Kunta yet. And so they contacted the drama schools at USC, UCLA, and CalArts. And so I found out about it from a notice on, somebody came in and made an announcement in one of my classes, and they said, you know, go take a look at the notice on the call board, which I did. And there were three of us, young black men, who went down to audition.
Did you guys kind of commiserate with each other about the opportunity or even share? Like, what was your process at that stage? Were you kind of like, no,
nobody
I'm going to keep to myself?
We didn't know what it was. We hadn't heard of Roots. I knew who Alex Haley was, oddly enough. My freshman year, I had done a term paper on Malcolm X, and Alex Haley wrote the autobiography of Malcolm X, or co-wrote it with Malcolm. So, interestingly enough, I knew who he was. And miniseries? Nobody knew what a miniseries was.
Yeah.
It was all a mystery.
And this is a time, too, when, I mean, it's probably bonkers for you to think of now. I mean, even with Roots and then reading Rainbow, just the amount of channels and options for programming versus now obviously is crazy. I mean, what do you even know the numbers that Roots got on ABC?
No, I don't. I believe that the final episode of Roots is still in the top 10 of most watched episodes of television in the history of the medium.
That's so crazy. And you know what's a close second? The season finale of season 18 of Keeping Up with the Kardashians. So you're in good company.
God, I hope so.
Yeah.
They're getting canceled. They're going off the air, the Kardashians.
I love that you know that. I mean, this is, but also we got nothing but time to soak up news that don't matter right now.
Yeah,
but
right?
But guess what? I mean, look, and they are, the fact that we're even talking about it, mission accomplished for them, right?
Times a billion.
Yeah. I know some people that know them. They know exactly what they're doing. Oh. You know, the fact that they're, it's all produced. It's all, and truly kind of brilliant where you're like, man, I just got to act like a just shit that making stuff that seems so minuscule in life and it doesn't matter and creating the family drama. I mean, they're probably just sitting there counting cash being like, LeVar Burton's probably talking about this bullshit right now.
Printing money, baby.
Printing money, baby. Where'd you find your love for acting?
In high school, really. I was I studied for the Catholic priesthood earlier in my life. At the same time I was going to high school, it was like a program that combined both high school and seminary. I really had an intention to, you know, pursue that as my career, as my life path. And through a series of circumstances where I was introduced to some books and some philosophies and ways of thinking that I decided that I wasn't going to become a priest. And I was looking around for, so what am I going to do with my life? And theater arts was right there.
Did you have a mentor or somebody in the family that kind of got the juices going in you? Or was it just, you had to pursue the passion on your own?
Everybody in my family is in education. They're all teachers. My mom, my older sister, two nieces, my son. If you're a Burton, you're probably in the education business. So I'm the I'm the first one in my family to really sort of branch out into a different approach. But there's still, I believe that there's still an opportunity, obviously, to educate, to use this very powerful medium of engagement to educate, to enlighten, to bring more to the table than simply entertainment, value-added entertainment. I suppose, in the sense that it's meaningful.
Right.
kind of content that I like to do has meaning, has impact, right?
Has that always kind of just been your mindset in picking the projects that...
It's just been my mindset in life. I mean, I was raised by a woman who really impressed upon me the value of being of service with your life. And that's just a part of my DNA. You've got to make the world a better place than the one you inherited. That's your job every day is, you know, to be as good a person as you can. Don't embarrass the family.
That's easier said than done sometimes.
And hike out your trash, right? Leave the world a better place than when you walked in.
I love that saying, and I'm a big Muppet guy too. Jim Henson was, you know, cream of the crop to me, and he had a quote that very much in line with that, where he's like, my whole goal was to leave the world a better place than having me been there. I think I'm fucking butchering it. We'll edit this out. But
I understand. Yeah. I have no idea what you said, but I understand what Jim meant.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying the episode. Man, it's good to be back. And you know what? The best part about being back is sharing the goodies with you, the fans. I love candles, okay? You know from listening to this podcast, we've always had candles living around the apartment and now my new place. And I'm tired of buying the bullshit candles from the store. I want some personal touch. I want something handmade. So that's why I found Hangover Candle Company. That's right. Homemade by a bartender in Fort Collins, Colorado. He's a big comedy fan, podcast fan, reached out, said, I love the pod, would love to send you some candles. I'm like, I'm not comfy giving you my address. He's like, come on, trust me. I was like, all right, let's roll the dice. Boom. Now I've got fucking 40 different flavors of Hangover Candle Company candles in my place. They're cut, sanded, poured, packed, and shipped all by him. And you can choose from over 200 different containers, okay, to build your candle in, and over 40 different scents to create your own smell. You can customize your own scent. Shit, man, they've got flavors like fucking root beer, apple pie, cinnamon stick, coffee, fresh cut grass, hazelnut, lavender, leather, maple syrup, peach, pine, sandalwood, spearmint, sea breeze, vanilla bean, watermelon. Go to Hangover Candle Co. On Etsy, okay? Go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co. It'll pop up the shop. And then pick your candles and then use the promo code ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. 25%. Hangover Candle Co. is on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. But again, go to Etsy, type in Hangover Candle Co., find the candles and the smells you want, create your own, and then use ALN25 at checkout to get 25% off your first order. I love candles. They're great for any occasions, bar mitzvahs, circumcisions, fucking weddings, funerals, gender reveal parties, divorce parties, coming out parties, coming in parties, coming parties. These candles are the shit, and they're my fave, and I want you guys to have them. So type in Etsy.com and then type in Hangover Candle Co. and pick your candles and use ALN25 at checkout for 25% off. All right? Start smelling better, start looking better, start feeling better, okay? Because everybody farts, and candles are a great way to get rid of that. And now back to the episode. You spoke to my BFA class in 2005. So that's how, so we actually have, we go way back.
Wait.
Is why I feel like that sweatshirt should be a gift at some point, because you came in, I don't know how many classes. If it was in the rotation, if it was like a press junket for you and you were hitting five different BFA classes that day.
No. I only did that a couple of times.
Ooh, for real? Because, dude, let me just say, when I went to SC, I'm from Seattle, Washington. I had NYU on the audition board, end up skipping my audition because my basketball team made the playoffs for the first time in 26 years. And I was like, I'm not missing that game. Sorry, NYU. But also, I was like, I want to stay closer to Seattle anyway. So LA was always in the back of my head is where I wanted to end up. Emerson passed on me. They'll regret it someday.
What?
They waitlisted me, and I got into SC. I thought it was going to be backwards because my SAT scores were not great. Not going to tell you what they were, 1070. But
Wow.
But I had so many – I was a bad test taker, LeVar. I was the guy that was like, second-guessing yourself is the most crippling thing you could do when taking the SATs.
Yes, absolutely.
When it says like cat is to kitten as dog is to A, puppy, B, futon, C, meth, or D, John Stamos, I'd be like, well, it's probably puppy, but man, Stamos is, so I was that guy. So
he's got those eyes.
So anyway, I'm looking up who went to SC just as a fun fact. Yeah. And dude, I mean, John Ritter, Will John Ferrell, Ritter. Zemeckis. Absolutely. But dude, and this is why, you know, your whole journey is just so inspiring and incredible on many levels. But dude, I can't, I mean, I'm 38. And when you talk about people being in their 40s, knowing Reading Rainbow, dude, I'm telling you, it's, and I'm sure you've heard it all the time. I'm sure you've gotten letters over the years. Bro, it is like insane, the impact and the connection to that show for in that time of my life, you know, especially to my folks split. Thanks for bringing it up. When we were, when you know, and TV really became like an extra escape, right? Which is why I think like the Muppet Show connected with me so much and TV in general. But dude, you had a way on that show, not only what the whole message was and making reading fun, because I still to this day got into reading, which is crazy. And again, this is probably a broken record for you to hear, because you made it seem fun. And the show, you know, just was something that I didn't know, you know, could inspire me the way it did.
You didn't realize what you were learning. You just thought you were watching TV.
Yeah, dude.
You didn't realize the messages that you were, you know, that you were absorbing. You were just watching TV. That was the point.
Well, you also have an ease to you, and you know, the voice matters. Like, I fucking would love to hear you just like, if you would mind at the end of this doing an outgoing voicemail for me, or even you know, speaking at my wedding, maybe just fucking zooming in, or
I am an ordained minister. I can do that.
Oh shit. All right. We'll put a pin in that. But even if this career takes a deep dive and I quit stand up and go into porn, maybe you can just narrate like the opening scenes, you know? Yeah. You know what? That's fine. Think sleep on that one. That was just,
let me give that one some thought, Adam. It's a little off brand.
But when you came to my class, dude, it was, it was a real special thing because, you know, you're an alumni, you've had this incredible career in so many facets of the business, right? And it was,
and
you.
If I'm not mistaken, on that particular occasion, I was really interested in delivering the message that the part about this that they don't teach you in school is the business, that it's a business.
Dude. Yes, you powered that home, dude.
It was really, because that was information I didn't have.
Really?
Right? They didn't have a class in show business will eat your lunch.
Yeah, right? And there keep going.
So I wanted, that's the way I thought I could be effective, is letting young people know that you've got to be ready. And if you are not absolutely sure that you can take the pain and abuse, get out now.
Yeah, man, I feel like just in the power of you saying that now, I was like, boy, even just now, I'm like, all right, I've been in this 15 plus years. Can I take it? Just the way that you broke that down, I was like, this might be the last thing I do.
You're doing fine.
You had a a conviction to the softness that you presented everything, and you were tough. But it was the first time I honestly, because you go through 4 years of pretty rigorous training. That was really, I mean, you know, I'm coming in from doing all these musicals in high school and a few plays to where everything's big. I mean, I think my last play was playing the Tin Man and the Wiz. In Shorecrest, I crushed it, dude. I mean, you heard earlier.
You started on your basketball team and started in the musicals.
Oh, dude, I quit football my sophomore year. This is what my essay for SC was. Quit football my sophomore year of high school. Was going to start varsity on the offensive line to play Danny Zuko in Grease.
I love you more than I can say in this now moment.
Dude, that's amazing.
That is so awesome.
Yeah, man. I mean, I was like, it was that true, like, had a foot in both worlds. And which is why I think, you know, stand-up has become such an important part of my whole being, because, man, meeting people, talking to people from all over has just always been, even when I bagged groceries at Albertsons in high school, it was like, I was friends with everybody, whether it was the kind of the asshole older boss that yelled at me for putting tampons next to peanut butter, or kids that were just a little slow putting bags. You know, I just a very open attitude. And so having like jock friends and then theater friends was really, I didn't see it like that either. It was just, you're just like, oh, cool. I get to do this. Then I get to do this. But when I had to pick, it was like, man, this acting thing's pretty fun. And there's definitely getting some cooler girls that are responding to Grease Lightning versus me getting the right play, you know, right? The right block down.
And that is true. It's the counterintuitive choice for most people would choose sports over theater arts.
Yeah.
I'd say 90%.
Yeah.
Folks would choose sports over theater.
Did you play it all?
Responded to the calling of your heart. That's pretty cool.
Well, my mom told me one day, she goes, what do you want to do? Because I was, you know, agonizing over having to go in and tell my coach, who was your stereotypical varsity coach. When I went in to tell him, I was thinking about it. He's like, come back in 2 weeks and tell me the right answer type of response. So like, yeah, no problem, coach. Yeah, yeah. Good chat. Thanks for being super supportive. Yeah.
Come back when you agree with me.
Yeah. So my mom's like, well, what do you want to do? And I go, well, I want to do the play. I go, that seems like fun. I go, I know I'm not going to go pro in football. It's been a fun thing to be a part of, and my friends. And look, I did all the camps. I'm lifted and I'm getting, you know, I feel like I can contribute. And I was going to start offensive line because the senior above me got injured. He made me sophomore captain. So all these things, I'm like, I got to do it to please coach. My mom just goes,
you were really about to disappoint this man.
Oh yeah. And my mom goes, living your life to please other people is no way to live it.
Yay,
and
mom.
I was just like, fuck. All right. Well, I guess I got to, you know, strap on that leather jacket.
Yeah.
And
right.
So man up. Did you, right. Have you had to make choices like that career wise, whether it's early or even as you got deep into it, where you were like, man, this is what I want to do, but this is maybe the financial move, or this is better for my family, but this is a part I've wanted to sink my teeth into, even though it's something that maybe people wouldn't expect or my agents don't want me to do?
Boy, nothing really comes to mind. I've been, whereas the choices in my career are concerned, I can't say that there's been any sort of master plan to this. I'm not one of those guys who could do anything they want. I'm the guy who takes what comes my way and makes the best of it, you know? I'm not in that strata, right, of cats who can say, I want to do a play in the fall, and then I'm going to go do this feature, and then I'm going to direct my first movie. That's not my life. But I do pride myself on being, I believe in showing up, being prepared, and at the same time being flexible, being willing to go with what the universe brings. And I think I've done a good job at sort of just taking what comes my way, letting the game come to me.
Yeah.
As frustrating as that is sometimes, right? But I just know on a very deep and fundamental level, and you know, this is the kind of stuff that comes with age and experience, that I believe that what's for me is going to be for me, and it doesn't do me any good to be jealous because somebody else is getting something that I'm not. That what they get is for them, that's their destiny, and what I get is for me. And I recognize that I've been really blessed. If you were to have asked me when I first got into this business, if you would have told me, you know, over the course of your career, you're going to be involved in three main pieces of entertainment and popular culture that really have an impact on the world, I would be certain that you were lying, right?
That's crazy.
You don't dream up a career like this. You know, I would have been afraid to ask for something like this as an outcome, because it's just too grand. You'd be grandiose in the assumption that you could do this.
What did you dream up? Like saying, because I know it is, you know, the deeper I get into this, I go, I set goals. There's so much uncertainty. I kind of try to just go, control what you can control, right? Even with like stand-up, once I got into it, I'm now 15 years in, I go, 5 years in, you know, you think I'm getting laughs, I'm crushing, I'm doing these 10-minute sets, I'm ready for a special. And then thank God a year goes by and you go, thank God I didn't get one. That's and then another year's go by. And then, but every year you try to just go, get better, get funnier, write all the time, and again, control what you can control. And then I started to see, but I had buddies that were like putting up on their boards, like, I want a special by this year of stand-up. And I'm like, yeah, but like, that's, I guess it's cool to make those, to have something to really strive for.
It is.
But you got no control over that, because there's all these other factors. So it's that understanding of put those things up to have a,
have something to shoot for, right? To have goals. But, you know, again, you got to be flexible. You have to deal with the what is.
So what were you, dreaming for? Like, what were
I didn't
you...
have, my immediate goal was to graduate with a BFA, a Bachelor of Fine Arts in drama, move to New York and hustle my way onto the Broadway stage. That was the plan.
Wow.
That was it. You know, that was it. I wanted to be Ben Vereen. I wanted that.
You say Ben Vereen or Wolverine?
Yeah. No, Ben Vereen.
Oh, okay.
I understand Wolverine is a hell of an actor and really.
Well,
really,
dude,
Great song and dance, man.
Hey guys, Adam Ray here for the About Last Night podcast. Hope you're enjoying this episode. Obviously, it's a very difficult time for everyone right now. We're all challenged in finding a day-to-day routine that that makes our lives consistent and awesome. And if there's something that's interfering with your happiness right now or preventing you from achieving your goals, BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. BetterHelp is a professional counseling service online, private, and it's so convenient. I've used it for a little bit now. It's truly the only way that I've found to help get my own issues dealt with on my own time, at my own pace. You can schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your licensed professional counselor right now. They're specialized in depression, anger, stress, anxiety, family conflicts, LGBT matters, grief or relationships, sleeping, which I have a lot of trouble with, trauma, self-esteem. Anything that you share with them is confidential. And guess what? If you're not happy with your counselor for any reason, at any time, you can request a new one for no additional charge. There's 3,000 U.S. licensed therapists across all 50 states, available worldwide. And again, there's four ways to communicate with them: text, chat, phone, and video. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. It's available on any desktop, mobile web, Android, and iOS apps. Schedule a video or phone session, generally weekly, unless your therapist schedules more, unless you just are really not sleeping and need to get some additional chats in. There's broad expertise in the network, which may not be locally available in many areas. Financial aid is available for those who qualify. It's secure, it's convenient, it's professional, and above all, it's affordable, all right? It's truly the most affordable option I've found. So right now, all ALN listeners are going to get 10% off your first month with a discount code About Last Night. So why not get started today and start making some changes for the better in your life? You deserve it. So go to betterhelp.com/aboutlastnight. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor that you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/aboutlastnight. Betterhelp.com/aboutlastnight and get 10% off your first month with promo code About Last Night. And now back to the episode.
Actually, Hugh Jackman is a great song and dance man.
Come on, dude.
I saw Hugh Jackman in Oklahoma, which was the play that I was doing when I got cast in Roots. I was doing Oklahoma at USC.
At SC?
Yeah.
They redid it my junior year. Junior year. This kid, James Snyder, who's now actually, you know, it's crazy to see, like, and I don't know how much you follow the alums past your year there, but it's like, man, like in my class, there were some pretty cool kids. I got a couple buddies below me that are on SNL right now, but James Snyder was a big musical kid, and I did How to Succeed in Business without really trying my freshman year, right?
Okay.
And then because I was
as a freshman, you got a lead in the musical.
That it was very ensemble. Real. Hey, featured ensemble. Let's just say Kelly Ward, who was in the original Grease. You know Kelly?
Kelly was in my class, dude.
Come
Kelly
on.
Was in my class. Kelly Ward? Kelly Ward and I were like at...
All right, see, now you're going to have to get me a sweatshirt and one for Kelly that says Kelly's Crew on the back, and we'll all kick it. We'll all go get sandwiches somewhere.
Kelly directed?
Dude, he directed it, and it was... So, you know, again, I'm coming from high school where I just did all musicals, right? No real straight plays.
Kelly was in Oklahoma with me.
Was he really?
Was in Oklahoma. Of course he was.
That guy was fucking... That was the only musical I did, because then after that, you know, in the BFA, as you know, like, you get your own show each semester.
Yep.
And it's just a lot, man. And I was like, I mean, I only took one semester off, which was senior year spring, but that's because a friend of mine produced and we did Sophistry outside of school at the McCadden Theater. And so still doing a show, but it was not an SC one. But I was like, I got to get one musical in me. And I just want to, you know, it's the college musical program and it's like, it's dope. And I met so many great people, but Kelly was directing it and he was such, I mean, he was so, it was a level up, you know what I'm saying? This guy, obviously you're looking at him being like, this motherfucker, no, he was in Greece, but he just knows his shit, man.
He does.
And
he came out of a musical theater background. He came out of musical at down in San Diego at Old Globe.
Right.
So he really is. He's the real deal. He is the real deal.
He was so generous too with, you know, because even in the ensemble, he was just as locked in on us being great as he was the leads, which I was really impressed by. But then, you know, I get towards the end and Henry Winkler, who also spoke to our class, who's become a nice pal. His son Max is in my fraternity. So Henry let me intern for him at Hollywood Squares. What did you pledge? I was AA Pi.
Really?
Yeah, the Jew fret. Yeah. We smoked bongs out of menorahs. Go on. No, I'm joking.
But my sophomore year, when I got roots, I was a boarder in the Sammy house, man. I lived on 28th Street. I was the first person of color. I was the first black person to live on the row.
Are you fucking kidding me?
Not at all. Not at all. I have the stories. I have the stories to back it up. I used to get stopped by LAPD almost nightly.
Holy shit. And you'd what? Have to show them your student
my
ID?
My student ID. Absolutely. I live at 801 West 28th. Let's not get it twisted. And I've got stories.
Yeah. All right. We can do a part two. But is this kind of your stories from that time? Is that somewhat of a catalyst for Two Front War that you're coming out with?
No. I mean, I've been a black man all my life, so it stopped being a surprise long before I got to college. It was not any easier to deal with, but it was not a surprise. So my social consciousness was shaped by my mother, who was very politically active. I grew up in Sacramento, which is a political town.
Your folks split when you were how young?
I was in the third, fourth grade.
Me too.
Yeah.
Fuck, dude.
Yeah.
And you went to live with mom?
Yeah. Right.
Do you feel, somebody just asked me this the other day, another friend who's folks split early, I didn't know, and he was like, yeah. I was like, yeah, there's days, and probably even now, where I go, wonder what it would have been like had I grown up with two folks. But I can't even let myself go that far down the path because I go, I am who I am because
that's right.
I had mom hustling and trying to play both parts and buying me condoms at 9, which was weird, but she believed in me. It's a joke. It's a joke, man. Come on. They're just going to, you know, not everyone's going to get the response you want. I haven't been on stage in 6 months.
Right? I'm a little rusty.
Yeah. Wait. So, okay. So you go off to Sacramento with her. Is that who you wanted to go with?
Oh yeah. There was no question. I mean, it wasn't a choice. I didn't have a choice.
Gotcha.
You know, this is what's going on. This is what's happening.
And so she was very,
we were overseas when their relationship sort of imploded. So we came home from Germany without him.
Wow. Yeah. Why Sacramento?
It was where we were before that tour of duty. And my mom really liked the West Coast. Mm. She wanted to raise her children in California, which was a darn sight better in her opinion than raising us in the Midwest and God forbid the South.
And so you said she was very politically active. So yes. Just at what age, I'm so curious, because even now, which, you know, you saying that you got stopped by LAPD on mm-hmm. the row, it's like I would hear those stories from friends on the football team mm-hmm. that would happen while I was in school from 01 to 05, which I'm mm-hmm. just like, what the fuck? That's still, you know, I still to this day, obviously, I just don't understand it.
Understand the politics of it, though.
Yep. Yes.
Makes sense, right?
Yes. Yes.
They're living on that street, on 28th Street. There are the sons and daughters of some of the most wealthy and influential families in the United States.
Come on.
Am I right?
The heir to the Kinko's fortune was like a two blocks away from me. And he was like, just go to my dad's place to print your paper. I was like, your dad has a shop? He's like, Kinko's. I'm like, fuck me.
Yeah. So LAPD has historically had a very, very close relationship. They have a very strong presence on the row at USC.
What was the first thing that, and again, I don't know how you as a black mother, father, what you say to your kid and at what age to kind of, I guess, paint the picture, right? And be like, look, there's.
I got the sex talk and the police talk right around the same time, sixth grade. Yeah.
Wow. So you get birds and the bees and you're like, all right, that was a lot. Let's move on. It's like, well, fucking, there's actually a little bit more that that you need to be aware of. Oh, froze you for a minute. You there, LeVar? Yo, yo. Oh, you there? You froze. Uh-oh. There he is.
Wow. We lost our internet.
Dude, if you wanted to end the show, just, I mean.
There are more graceful ways. Just don't ghost on a guy. Just don't ghost a motherfucker.
It's a classic Irish goodbye. Just like just like you were, you know, done at the party and you're like, I'm going to slip out the back. Yeah, dude, we've all done it.
Yeah. Yeah, we lost our internet. Actually, they didn't know I was in here doing an interview and they reset the modem. So.
Oh, shit. Well, thanks for popping back on. And it would have been a real gangster move if you were just like, he got enough.
He got enough.
I let him sing the theme at me. That was fucking more than I was willing to allow.
Prepared to handle.
Yeah. So you said birds and the bees talk, and then your mom.
Birds and the bees, right? You know, followed by in that same time frame, in that same period of my life, the talk about what to do when you're stopped by the police. Not if, mind you, when.
Man, what does that register? Is it even a real thing to think about, or do you just kind
of? Oh God, yeah.
Okay.
No, that's a real thing to think about.
Yeah, because it seems so crazy to feel like that conversation needs to even happen. So I don't know if you're like, what are you talking about?
That's a conversation that needs to happen. In America, that's a conversation that needs to happen. Yeah. See, what is happening now is that what I refer to as my melanin challenged brothers and sisters, right? Like yourself. You guys are just becoming aware of what we've lived all along. America's racist as hell.
Yeah, man.
It's in our DNA, right? It's in our DNA, this country. And we've got to, we have an opportunity here to really deal with this and make some very significant, much needed change. And if we don't, heaven help us. But this is not news to black people, indigenous people, and people of color. This is not news at all. It's news to y'all.
Yeah.
But it's not news to us.
I can't remember who it was that said it. I don't know if it was Will Smith or...
It was Will saying that the only thing that's changed is that everybody's got a video camera. It's all being shot and shared, right? That's what's changed. The technology has enabled everybody to get dialed in on what happens when no one else is around.
There's a comedian friend of mine, Finesse Mitchell, who was on SNL for a little bit, and he was telling me the same thing. He's like, because, you know, I've been very active with my, just trying to use my platform and voice for good. I feel, you know, a lot of people say, oh, if you're not saying anything, then you're saying everything by that. And I just, look, I have never cared about, you know, and it's unfortunate to see how many people that follow you for your comedy that will come at you for your trying politics. To be on the right side of history. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm a person first, you dumbass. And this is just not even a debatable issue. And people that want to try to nitpick things and certain videos that have been posted and Finesse hit me up and he was like, I've gotten it from several of black friends and comedians that are just like, hey, thanks for not being afraid to do that. I'm like, yeah, obviously. And then they're like, you wouldn't believe the amount of, you know, I think it's just speaking in the comic world, people that just don't even. And a buddy of mine told me, he's like, man, I saw that backlash you got on this video. And and you're just, you know, voicing your stance and feelings about it all. And he's like, that's why I don't do it. And I go, well, you're a coward. And I know you feel the same way, or maybe you don't, because you're not doing it for that reason is so, it's just such a bitch move to me. But Finesse was like, bro, you don't even know that. And just to piggyback on that, he's like, the things I've gone through that I've, you know, there's no tape of that stuff. And he's like, I could fucking tell you so many stories that would blow your mind that you don't, that you, and man,
I had LAPD pull a shotgun on me one night, and the thing that struck me most about it was not the gun so much, not staring down the barrel of a shotgun at virtually point blank range, but his partner. I recognized him. He'd stopped me before a couple of nights previous. And wow. So it was, that's when the penny dropped for me. They don't see me. They just see black skin and somebody who doesn't belong on this street.
Oof.
I always answer the description of somebody who was stealing car stereos in the neighborhood. That was their reason and rationale. That was their probable cause. The probable cause was my black skin.
Do you, going through that stuff, is there a sense of, as you're going through your career, I mean, are you more sensitive to picking up on racial tendencies or people that you're dealing with, whether it's someone you're working with on set or even in the casting process, where you can pick up on things where you're like, you know what I'm saying? You're just a little more aware of, you go, oh, I know exactly who you are and what you stand for. Even if you don't say it, there's a look in your eye or there's a way that you talk to me that just tells me, where you are, as far as, black and white.
It happens. It happens. Yeah.
And then you try to turn that down so that you're,
it happens in public. It happens. It this is America.
Yeah.
Remember, Adam, you know where you are? Do you know where you are? Do you know the history of this country?
Yeah.
Right? It is part and parcel of what it means to be a person of color and live here. And I think that Doc Rivers expressed it perfectly, and for me. And I've said similar things before. Being black in America is very much about loving a country that doesn't love us back.
Yeah. What keeps you going and not just wanting to move out of here and start a life somewhere else?
It's all I got. It's all I got. Remember going back to Irma Jean, my mother, leave this world a better place. Mm. This is worth fighting for.
Yeah.
'Cause I'm fighting for members of my family 7 generations from now. Just like my ancestors endured, fought, died for my right to go to USC, right?
There was no issue with you getting into SC because of the color of your skin, right? That wasn't.
No, in 1974, it was a bonus. It was a plus.
Right. Check that diversity box.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had the grades in the SAT. I was a good candidate.
Yeah.
The color of my skin was not an impediment.
Right.
In that situation.
Welcome to King's Guado Hotel. May I have your last name, please?
Good morning, ma'am. Can I help you?
Oh my, what happened? Oh,
bellmen are clumsy and stupid.
Stella Bellman. You've had this job since high school, right?
Well, actually now I am the bell captain.
Oh. All right, kid. You ready for check-ins?
I was born.
I think he was going to say I was born ready.
Steve, the captain. Captain Steve.
The closest thing we have to a god on Earth, Gunther Gachamone!
It's worse than I thought.
He's a complete slimeball, right?
Oh, yeah. No question.
Do you feel my foot on your foot?
That's not me.
There's something under the table that feels like a foot.
What are you doing right now?
I'm working.
I got a promotion.
I just lied to Kelly.
Why would you do that?
I don't know, man. I just want another shot.
Sid Whitman worked his way up the ladder and bought the hotel.
He's the boss.
Do me a favor. Take it easy on the bellman, would you?
I'd rather have Crackguard melt my balls.
Take care, boys.
I mean, it's a huge scam. And those girls were in on it, too.
Don't you want to know what our bodies are capable of?
Yes.
Girl, yes. Definitely. I just work here during the day, but my nights is off.
Let's do this!
Gunther is conning everyone with Spirit Fresh.
You broke into a guest room!
This is unacceptable!
He has been impersonating a manager, and that is a felony.
I don't think that's a felony.
He should be fired!
Get set! Go! Bunch of really real G's burning trees till we low, sitting by 45 like I'm Jordan on the flow. Here we go, guess the brain is what they say my name for.
I mean, I'm not sure he's ready for...
Shut up, bitch.
With our minds, we begin to urinate, and then, for real, into our pants. I'm
unforgettable. The way that you were, to get back to you speaking to my class and sharing us how much of the business side you are not prepped for, I'm assuming that was also the case when you were there, that you didn't have anyone to ever. And that's the one thing that, again, which was so invaluable that you said, because, and it was actually kind of made you a little quite irate at the end, because it was right before we're graduating.
Yeah.
That you go, oh yeah, like the training part is awesome, but now I'm going into CSI for an audition with a Vinegar Tom on my resume, and they're like, "The fuck is that?" And you're like, "Oh, I play the witch hunter," and they're like, "Cool." And but any sort of, you know, you try to give a crash course on it, which was again so imperative for that moment and for you wanting to decide if this was what you wanted. Because, dude, I think I had 22 kids in my class, 25 when we started. By the time that senior class, it was about 15, right?
Okay.
Kids that switched majors, moved back home, just realized, man, this is a lot. I don't, you know, I've said my last badoo, badoo, badah vocal exercise. And this was just not, this is not for me. And you were talking to a group that I think was still all in, but I look at now, I'd say there's maybe myself. Maybe I think one other person pursuing acting. And then other people that are in the production side and whatnot. But we all, I remember after that, were like taken aback, a little, again, frustrated, scared. But then you could see in the people like myself that were like, all right, shit. Well, I'm glad I got that info now.
Buckle
like,
up.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, dude.
But time to put on the big boy pants, right?
I mean, had you not been so candid about that stuff, I mean, I immediately, to get back to Wolverine real quick, when I thought you said Ben Vereen Wolverine, my first job right out of college, I graduated, was working at Universal Studios Hollywood playing, you guessed it, baby.
Wolverine?
No, Ben Vereen. No, Wolverine, oh. Yeah. They had a Ben Vereen character at the park. I don't know when was the last time you went there. No, Wolverine, yeah.
Crazy. That's dude, so awesome.
It was a flexing the performing muscle. First, I was a tour guide on the tram, and then I needed to.
No. They said, no, this guy, we're wasting him on the tram. There are so many other people who can do tram. We need a guy to put on the suit. We need somebody who can come through the fur.
Dude, he's got the sideburns already. We'll add the fake abs. He's clearly too much.
That's
It was a way. I didn't want to wait tables. I had no shame on that. But I, in fact, I tried it for 2 days at Fleming's. My buddy got me a job downtown LA. And, you know, I had a panic attack because the head chef was telling me I was cutting butter squares the wrong way. And I was like, dude, I'm having palpitations. I think I'm gonna have to go back and put the claws back on. And, I started working at a casting office, 4 or 5 days a week for free. I mean, dude, I was,
smart move, Adam.
Dude, it was huge. It was a big comedy cast, Jeannie McCarthy and Nicole Aguilera. Yes. Started working for them. Still very tight with them.
Yeah.
Just to soak up, and I became a main guy to where, you know, I went to San Diego with Russell Brand and Jason Segel to put Kristen Bell on tape for Forgetting Sarah Marshall. So I became like a guy that was like handling big sessions. The experience I got on the other side of the camera, not only to be a reader for them, I was like a go-to reader, but it was... Right. Man, just to observe, and which is why I thought class was still a nice piece of the puzzle post college. Yep. Remember, you definitely said that you were. I don't think I would have done that had you not said that.
I was in class at the time.
Yep. Yeah. Were you really?
Yeah.
You might have said you can not do class. You're like, but I would do class, but don't take my word for it. I think is what you said. I don't want to misquote you. That's my second misquote, but
I'll allow it.
Okay, good. You just, again, man, it was, it's so, always so fascinating to me how, like, again, you were like, I only did a couple of these, but dude, it was such a, an overwhelming amount of info that, you know, I needed at that time. Mm-hmm. And, because again, like you said, it gave me at least a little bit of a, I don't even know I had to reach for my seatbelt, and mm-hmm. now I'm going to put it on before the car started, thank God, instead of, you know, graduate, car's already on the 10 freeway, and I'm like, I don't even fucking know how to merge on this bad boy. And you were real, you just cared. And it was, I mean, man, you were, you know, I don't know if that shit was scripted, but.
I could look at you and see myself, because I was, you know, I just, the adjustment of being thrust into show business at that age, and it was really learning on the job, just like I said, getting thrown into the deep end and learning how to swim. I just wanted somebody to be honest with you guys. Hmm. I still think that it should be a course that juniors and seniors take.
Come on.
Right?
Yeah. Do you remember you had a phone, your phone went off. My buddy reminded me of this during it, and the ringtone, I think it was, my buddy said, and I faintly remember it was, I think, a woman's voice singing like, you've got a phone call. Like, do you remember that?
Yes, I do. Yes. Ring, 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 ring.
Dude. And it was
somebody singing ring.
Yeah, dude. And it was at a very intense moment. I don't know if you remember this either. I think it was a switchblade at one point, or maybe a Swiss Army knife.
I was talking about discernment.
Yes.
And when I talk about discernment, I use a knife as the metaphor, because it can be a weapon or a tool.
Yep. Fuck, dude. And I remember you, and then I think you were even maybe smacked it on your forehead or something. Cause my buddy and I were like, bro, if he starts bleeding, that's definitely a weapon. Yeah, LeVar dude. Burton
cuts himself.
Yeah.
Okay, film at 11.
For the love of the craft.
Yeah, man.
No, dude, that was, so man, a much belated thanks for that time, dude.
It's wild that you were in that moment.
That's never forget cool. It dude, it was, again, knowing you went there and then to get that at the end was a very odd full circle moment, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'm not saying I went to the school because you went there, but no. Guess what, dude, it was I don't know if I can wholeheartedly say that, because it was, it got me jacked up to know, look, it's like anything, you go,
it's possible.
Yes.
It happened for him. It could happen for me.
Yes.
But there's a pathway there, right? It makes all the difference in the world.
Gates McFadden also taught a clown class for us there, and I took that, which was a huge comedy. She really helped me in, you know, obviously the whole BFA program helped me in dialing things down and not being so big and presentational, and really, you know, learning that, you know, and you know this better than anyone, that for film and TV acting, I mean, it's like, got to reel that shit in, right?
Absolutely.
What do you feel like from that program? Because sometimes people will try to play devil's advocate and be like, dude, just go out and, I know, especially in film school, it's like, go get the experience. I don't know what you can learn in the classroom that you can't just learn from the school of hard knocks and getting out there and doing it. But I cannot imagine not going through that program and the things that I picked up and was able to, you know, just get more still and reel it in and contain even all those dumb vocal exercises. And dude, I now, especially for voiceover, man, being able to articulate and in yes. stand up and be able to yeah. talk yeah. sometimes at a speed that feels a little fast, especially for my mom's sake, I didn't understand any of your jokes. I'm like, they're not for you, but no, she's great. She loves it. But all that stuff in the moment, I was like, yeah, I don't know how this is really going to impact me. And it, boy, paid off. Did you feel like there were pieces of the program that
here's the thing. I was studying theater. When I read for the director, when I read for David Green, the director of Roots, for the first time, he told me later that he almost threw me out of the office because I didn't have that awareness that acting for the camera was a very intimate thing, especially in terms of your energy expenditure. But he said, in turning around the note and going from trying to reach the last row to you know, to bringing it just to this moment right here, right now. He knew then that he had found the actor that he'd been looking for.
Wow. Do you think Star Trek, I mean, that was that even, were you a fan? Did it come along? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely. And that was, and I will say this about Star Trek. I was at a point in my career where I was really looking for change, and I engaged in an exercise where I wrote down what I wanted to happen in my life, and Star Trek was an answer to that.
You wrote that down?
Now, I didn't write down Star Trek, but I wanted to do a television series. I'd never done a television series before, and I wanted steady work. Mm-hmm. I wanted a gig that lasted longer than a month or two. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I wrote it down. I taped it above my head where I slept, and you know, I really visioned on that for a good 6-8 weeks, and boom. Then it came. So I just feel like, you know, once you get clear about what it is you want in your life, right, then that accelerates the process of what it is you want coming your way. But you got to get clear. You got to be clear about what it is you want.
How do you come upon the point to where you feel like you have honed in on that clarity? Like, is it a lot of deliberating back and forth about what do I want, and then, or is it come to you instinctively?
I believe that if you are willing to be quiet enough and to be still enough, you'll hear the truth. All you have to do is be still and willing to hear the truth, and you will. And it's that inner voice that's delivering the message.
Was that an offer or one audition?
It was an opportunity. It was an opportunity. Yeah. And I've always said, you know, get me in the room. If it's for me, then I walk out with a gig. But, and if it's not, then next, right?
I feel like you've always, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like even before Roots, you've had a confidence and swag to you in the room. You're very personable, obviously, like on camera, it speaks for itself. But did Roots take things up a notch? Were you already there when you walked in for Star Trek? Were you like, shit, bitch, like, I don't know, like, you know I can read, like, just give me the glasses and let's do this.
Being an actor, you know, it's a constant battle. I hate myself, I love myself, I hate myself, I love myself,
yep.
Right? So you just have to keep going, because it's not about how much swag you have. It's about how you feel in that moment about who you are and what you can bring to the table. And that doesn't always line up, you know, with your aspirations or your dreams. It takes a lot to keep coming back no after no after no after no. And they're not saying no to an abstract. They're saying, no, kid, not you, right? Well, yeah. And they don't tell you that there's no feedback as to why not.
That's the worst part.
It's just a no.
I know, dude. So now you're stuck with stewing over your thoughts why.
And it validates all of the bad shit that's going on in your head, right?
You just have to get to a point to where you trust in what you're doing and go, it wasn't, you know, they were picking wallpaper. It was my look against whatever. Talent wasn't the issue, right? And just get comfortable enough in your own skin to know. But you need those many victories and some people along the way being like, yeah, great read, but not the thing. Like, you need a couple of those.
You do. You need that positive feedback, because it is hard. It's tough. It is not easy to keep getting up and keep getting kicked down.
When you walked out of the audition, did you feel like you nailed it?
I didn't. March 27th, 1976, I was screen tested. And that, I thought I did a good job there. And that's when the wait really started. Because the screen test went back and forth from the ABC in New York and ABC in Los Angeles. And the execs were just, you know, sort of ping-ponging it back and forth. Nobody really wanted to make the decision and give the job to the kid from USC who'd never acted in front of a camera before. I think there was a lot of, you know, protecting their own asses that was going on.
Yeah, yeah.
But then David Wolper and Alex Haley and Stan Margulies, they all stood up for me. They said, this is the kid we want, and we want to go with him. And otherwise, you know, we've got to forestall production and keep looking. And when I got the word, when Stan said, pack your bags, I was, like I said, 2 weeks later, I was in Savannah, Georgia.
And what about Star Trek? Same type of feeling?
Star Trek. I was a huge Star Trek fan when I was a kid. So when I got the call to come and audition, my first and only question was, is Gene Roddenberry involved? And when they told me yes, then I was jacked. I was psyched. I wanted to be in it because Star Trek meant so much to me growing up.
What was there anything special for Geordi LaForge that you did? Like, how much of a character breakdown do they give you? Was it
not
like
much? Not much. They gave me a pair of sunglasses to audition with.
Dude, you made fucking visors. That little Stevie.
Little Stevie and O'Ray.
O'Ray. Oh man, come on, come on. Yeah, right.
But you know, it worked out. It worked out. See, Star Trek for me, when I was growing up, Star Trek was one of the few examples of people of color on TV that were depicted in a positive light. And I was a big science fiction fan when I was a kid, still am. And Gene Roddenberry's vision of the future was one of the few where I saw myself being included. And so it meant an awful lot to me. And then to have the opportunity to compete for a chance to be a part of that story, that was really exciting to me.
There's some miscellaneous things about you that I don't know how much they come up in your life or people give you props for, but I didn't know this, that you received a Grammy for Best Spoken Word Album for the autobiography of Martin Luther King Jr. in 2000. Mm-hmm. That's incredible.
Yeah, it was cool. That was a nice night. That was fun.
Yeah? Was that?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah. Again. What a Grammy.
Yeah. Well, shit, you've won fucking...
I went to the parties. Yeah.
What's... Oh, yeah, man. What's the difference? Because you won 12 Daytime Emmys for Reading Rainbow, which is also fucking bonkers, but also so well-deserved. Is there a difference between winning...
a Grammy and an Emmy?
Yeah. I mean, was there a point when you were like, all right, we get it. Another Emmy? Oh,
No.
Special every time?
No. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what's
you also need to know that among those 12 wins are dozens of losses, dozens of times that they didn't call my name.
Right.
So I believe in celebrating those small acts, those victories, right? When you get a W, be appropriate, but celebrate.
Right.
Celebrate that shit.
Right.
It's important.
Also in 2019, you received the honorary Doctor of Humane Letters from the University of Massachusetts Lowell.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
It's one of a couple of honorary doctorates I hold.
I mean, is there obviously nobody does it for that stuff, but is there like winning the Grammy for the spoken word for MLK did you get to a point from just, I guess, talking so much on TV that people were like, man, you got a great voice for this stuff? Or is it something that you seek out because you're like, oh, I really enjoy the, you know, talking and my voice?
It feels like books on tape and voiceover work was something that I kind of fell into naturally.
Yeah.
By the time I did MLK, I had been nominated for the Miles Davis autobiography.
Wow.
And I had done several books on tape already. It's just, you know, I guess it's just a natural thing, you know.
Yep.
I'm obviously a fan of the written word, and it just made sense to start doing that kind of work.
You take care of your pipes too, huh?
I do. I do.
What's the secret? Because I'm a VO guy, and you know, obviously, there's been some weed and tequila going down these pipes over the last 25 years.
I'm working with a vocal coach now. When COVID started, I was doing live readings on Twitter 3 times a week, and
oh shit,
I was afraid that I had done some damage to my voice, and I went and got it. Got a COVID test and got it scoped as soon as I could. And so there's nothing going on with the, vocal cords. They're great, but I'm learning how to speak and talk without muscling the sound through. I have a tendency to speak from a glottal stop. Yep. And having everything that I say supported on breath is something that I'm learning. I'm unlearning 40 some odd years of bad habits.
Wow.
And it was really, really scary. About a month or so ago, I was not sure that I was going to be able to do this. But I'm actually experiencing some success now, and I'm really, really excited for the future, because what I was doing, I understand was not sustainable.
Sure.
And
congrats, man.
I feel like I'm going to be able to use my voice and to make a living with my voice for a lot longer than I would have. So this was a pattern interruption for me that was really necessary.
And the podcast, and you're doing the podcast, LeVar Burton Reads.
Yeah,
right?
I'm doing that from the closet downstairs in the master.
That's awesome. And what you're reading? Short stories.
Short stories is my jam. That's what I do. I say at the beginning of every episode, the only thing these stories have in common is that I love them.
That's awesome.
I hope you will too.
Oh, damn. You're so good with the fucking the setup, the button. I mean, dude, if you could make a coffee table book or teach a seminar on how to leave a room, we clearly know that you know how to leave a Zoom.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, dude, yeah, that's amazing. Do you enjoy doing the podcast?
I love doing the podcast. I really do. Because I, you know, when I was in the third grade, Mrs. Twiggs.
Remember, isn't that crazy? Miss Robish. God. Never forget that shit.
Right?
Yeah.
Mrs. Twiggs was the first person outside of my family, right, to recognize that I had a talent. And I was the best reader in the third grade class. And sometimes Mrs. Twiggs would, after lunch, go make herself a cup of tea in the teacher's lounge. And she would give me a book and put me in front of the class and have me read, knowing that they would still be in their seats when she came back. Right. So this is been a part of me loving to read aloud for almost all of my life. And it's one of my favorite forms of storytelling.
Have you ever read, because again, your pipes are just, you know, second to none. Do you, have you ever done a spoken word reading of the Reading Rainbow theme song?
I have not.
Do you know the words?
God, I hope so.
Do you want to do it right now?
Butterfly in the sky. I can go twice as high. Take a look. It's in a book. The Reading Rainbow. Now I'm going to Shatner. I can go anywhere.
A little walking. Yeah. Yeah. I got friends to know.
Yeah. Ah, ways to grow. The Reading Rainbow.
Oh, my.
Who doesn't love Chris Walken?
Dude. I mean,
Chris Walken is God. He really is.
And
an amazing song and dance man. I'm just saying.
Yeah, right? Another, right? Yeah, yes. Dude. There's guys that have
those things. Triple threat.
In the Hugh Jackman department of guys that just come out with these extra skills, and you're like, dude, where was that?
Yep.
Exactly. Is there a skill like that that you possess that people would be surprised to know? First of all, I'll tell you this much. Didn't know you were as quick as funny as you are. You're very, you've got a comic's mind, man. You yes and
people
brilliantly.
Don't know that Kunt is funny.
Oh my God. All right, dude. Whatever your next album/book is, if that ain't the title.
is that the title of my first memoir? People don't know that Kunt is funny.
You are, man. It's, you know, as a comic too, it's just like I've gotten to know Dwayne The Rock Johnson right over the past several months. Another guy that just
he's quick, you know,
very quick, and mm-hmm. just like yourself, man. And this is what I get juiced up for: are guys that just yes and want to play out a bit and go on a little tangent, knowing that you're going to get back to what you were talking about,
whatever it was. Yeah,
because that only is not just a great quality for a person, but man, it's like for just conversations in life, because I'm sure we both have had our fair share of get-togethers, family or not, where you're in a circle with people and you're like, man, I'm just going to have to do all the heavy lifting on this. And where's the licorice? Did they say there was licorice nearby somewhere, you know, and find an out for yourself. But
yeah,
have you gotten more into, before we wrap this up, in doing readings and just using the pipes more, you know, more, impressed by certain voices, or do you listen to more things with a little more intent? Because
I certainly have my favorite voices.
Yeah,
you know, yeah. Obviously James Earl. Oh, right.
Come on.
My friend Lawrence Fishburne has an amazing voice.
He's wow.
Michael Dorn.
Yeah.
Amazing voice. Jonathan Frakes and Patrick Stewart. I think all of the guys on Next Gen, Brent Spiner. I mean, I think we all. We don't suck in the voice department.
I would add LeVar Burton to that list for sure. All right, dude, LeVar Burton Reads the Podcast, wherever you get podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You're great on Twitter, by the way. You're very, very vocal. You're very active about everything that's going on, which I, again, it's like, I don't know if there's a responsibility there, but you, you're using your platform, and your voice, man. And it's really, I know it's, you know, appreciate.
That's why we're here.
Yeah,
that's
man. Here. And Two Front War. Yes, when is that? Yeah. Would you give me, some background?
We are working now. It depends on how it goes with the world opening back up for travel. I'm able to edit here, in my house, and the editor's on the East Coast, but we're able to be, you know, in the same session at the same time. But the interviews, there are a lot of Vietnam vets that I need to get out and conduct these interviews. I'm actually going to be in the doc, which is unusual for a documentary.
Yeah.
But I really feel like I'm perfectly suited to tell this story. I watched the Vietnam War when I was growing up on TV during the dinner hour, and I have brothers and not blood brothers, but my brothers, friends, close friends that I've grown up with that had older brothers. The draft ended the year before I graduated from high school. And the war was over my first year of college. So,
wow.
I know I can tell this story.
Yeah.
The story of black soldiers in Vietnam.
And so it's from what, vets, activists, journalists, students, civilians, yeah. right? Just all spanning the gamut.
Right.
That's awesome.
Exactly.
When is that coming out? Do you have a...
If we're lucky, 2021, but probably 2022.
Cool. Yeah. We'll plug that, or maybe get you back on.
Man.
Also, hey man, let's not go another 16 years before we reconnect like this, dude. It's your like I've said, man. It, you know, you've been an inspiration on many levels, and it's just the coolest when, you know, having a podcast like this and getting opportunities to talk to people like yourself and have you be like, you know, the don't meet your heroes thing. I went to Dave Chappelle's summer camp a couple of weeks ago because his tour manager is a real good buddy of mine. And out in Ohio, you've seen what he's doing, right? Unbelievable. And Dave is truly the GOAT, dude. I mean, not only is generous with how he is everything to his family and friends, but I probably had eight, and yeah, I counted, you know, one-on-ones with him, whether they were 3 minutes or 30 seconds, where he just, like yourself, man, eye contact, locked in. What you're saying, he's taking it. He's given moments. And when there's so much around him to want his time.
Yeah. He knows how to focus.
Yeah.
He knows how to focus.
Yeah. I know you got some licorice to chomp on.
And Red Pines, not licorice. I mean, I'm a black licorice fan, so there's definitely a distinction.
Oh, I was Things just going to ask.
Do not get it twisted, Adam.
I was going to say Red Pines or Twizz, no?
And Twizz aren't even licorice. They're just licorice-flavored candies. Black
Damn,
licorice,
dude, throwing shade on those.
Black licorice is a thing. It's a
thing.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
And so that's all I'm going to say about that.
No better way to end it, dude. I fucking love you, man.
Black licorice matters, Adam. Black licorice matters.
Oh my God. You're a dude. I'm telling you, man, stand-up's in your future. Fucking shit. LeVar, man, it's an honor, man. And I hope we can connect
you,
live.
Ray.
I hope we can appreciate connect you in person, man, when this is all
I'd
over.
Yeah, I'd like that very much. And yeah, this was a bonus finding out that you went to USC.
Yeah, dude, yeah. I'm glad you remembered it. Because here's the worst part. If I have this deep connected memory and you're just like,
I don't remember.
Dude, I don't fucking, who are you? Like, I was seeing blank, you know, yeah.
That's very cool for me.
Well, dude, I'm glad you and the fam are safe and sound, and this will go up next week, man, and I can't wait for people to hear.
Tell your mom I said hi.
I will, dude. Yeah.
What's her name?
Puddin.
Puddin?
Well, her real name's Carolyn, but she, a little Oklahoma Jew, my grandpa gave her that nickname. It was like, she's my little, I think it was like Puddin-y was maybe the nickname. I don't know, man. The Midwest, they got weirdest nicknames. But if you met her, dude, I mean, she just turned 71. She's always like, she's like, I feel like I'm 40, but I got these fucking arthritic witch hands. I mean, she's where I get everything from, dude. The comedy, the, and you know, she did four jobs, me and her, for, well, my sister went to a girl's